This is so much fun. He grabbed her. I had no idea you had this side. She leaned in close. Careful what you wish for. Everyone met back at Bob's office. Just as Daniel and Christy came in, the lights flickered. Jean looked up and pronounced, Power's back on. Good, Bob replied. Teague was sitting in the other chair at the console and swiveled around. I think we should start thinking about getting out of here. Why? Christy asked. How long do you think we can hole up in here? He pointed off in the direction of the street. You think they're just going to go away?
We're safe in here, she replied.
For now, Jean added. Christy looked surprised.
You think they could get in here?
Jean laughed. They will, eventually. There's no doubt they will ultimately get in. That is, unless the cops get a handle on things. I think Cousin is right, Bob said.
Bob's statement surprised everyone.
Daniel asked,
What?
Bob told everyone about the armory lootings. That's several miles northeast of here. I doubt that it's going to bother us, Daniel said. It's not the fact they were looted. It's the way the news reported it, Bob said. They're already saying it was right-wing extremists that did it. Christy fell into a chair.
So what's that mean?
I doubt a bunch of right-wingers planned all these lootings to happen at the same time. It took a lot of coordination. Oh, they could do it, Teague said.
Everyone turned to look at him. He shrugged it off.
I mean, look at the thing in Lansing. They can coordinate operations if they want.
Bob sipped his coffee as he studied Teague.
Where'd you say you came from?
Teague tried to play the question off.
I've been traveling for a while, just out seeing the country.
He's from Michigan, Bob, Daniel said.
Bob chuckled. Out seeing the country, my ass.
Teague ignored the comment.
I don't get it. What's the big deal with them saying it's right-wing people looting the armories?
Christy asked.
Coffee cup in hand, Bob pointed to one of the monitors. Look at those people. Do they look like members of the GOP to you?
Christy pursed her lips.
Sounds kind of racist, Bob.
Bob laughed out loud.
It's got nothing to do with racism. Pointing to one of the monitors, he asked Andy to zoom in. Look at that sign. Give us our money. EBT is a right. I want my fair share. Does that sound like something you'd hear out of a Republican? A conservative?
Jean grunted.
Fucking Republicans aren't conservative anymore. They're pandering to the same crowd the damn Democrats are.
I don't see why it matters what those people in the street think. They're all acting like animals, Christy said. Just then, the TV with CNN on it changed. The multicolor screen of the emergency alert system came up, and the all-too-familiar tone followed. In the center of the screen was a black box that read, This is not a test. A state of emergency is in effect. Remain where you are and await further instructions. This is not a test. At the same time, everyone's cell phone began to issue the same tone and scroll the same message. As each checked their phone, Bob said,
Well, this sucks.
Christy was looking at her phone. What is going on?
I think the shit just hit the fan, Jean said.
I can't text, Andy said. I'm trying to text my mom, and it says communications are restricted as a result of a national emergency.
Bob picked up the phone on the desk beside Andy and pressed 9 for an outside line.
He immediately heard the rapid busy signal, not the usual one you hear when a line is in use, but the fast one that lets you know something is wrong with the line.
Landline is down too, Bob said, as he dropped it back into the cradle.
What?
Christy asked.
Bob leaned back on the desk and shook out a smoke. He lit it and took a deep drag, letting it dangle from his lips as he spoke.
You know, the powers that be have been prepping this country for a long time for a civil war, revolution, whatever you want to call it. I think we've just witnessed the kickoff.
Andy swung around in his chair. I need to get the fuck out of here. My mom isn't well. I need to get home to take care of her. The lights flickered again and dimmed. Jean announced,
We're on generator again.
Bob pointed at the monitors.
Let's take a look around the area, Andy.
It was getting late in the day. The clock on the wall to the right of the monitors indicated it was nearly 8:45 p.m., dusk outside. The streets were filled with throngs of people. But more striking than the number of people on the street was the absence of light. The streets were already getting dim. The only lights the cameras could find were from the fires started by the protesters, and there were many. Columns of smoke could be seen rising around the city.
Change to the rooftop pole camera, Andy, Bob said.
The big screen on the wall flickered to a new view. This one was high above the city and had a 360-degree view of Buckhead and Greater Metro Atlanta. As the camera panned around, Christy whispered,
Oh my God!
Look at all those fires, Daniel said quietly. Bob sipped his coffee.
And some of them are huge, too.
From the high vantage point of a camera mounted to a pole in the roof of the bank, the real situation in Buckhead and Greater Atlanta could be seen. Smoke rose from numerous places around Buckhead. There was also smoke rising from the areas outside Buckhead, showing the chaos was spreading in Midtown and downtown Atlanta.
I think we need to get the hell out of here, Christy said.
And go where? Bob asked.
Christy looked at him. It's not safe here. With the power out, we can't last long here.
It's not just here. The power is off everywhere, at least everything in the area as we can see from here, Andy said.
This is a problem.
I agree we need to move, but before we do, we need to have a plan in place, somewhere to go.
We can't just run into the street with the rest of these morons, Bob said.
Teague was sitting in a chair, leaning back with the front legs off the floor.
You know they're about to send troops into the area, don't you?
Everyone looked at him. Dropping the chair to the floor with a thud, he continued.
This is the first phase of the operation. They've taken away the ability of people to communicate. No comms, no organization. They killed the TV, so the news can't show it either. Shit's about to get real.
Bob looked into his cup and swirled the grounds in the bottom of it.
What makes you so sure?
They've been planning this for years, Teague replied.
You one of those conspiracy whack jobs? Andy asked.
Teague shot him a look of disgust.
You one of those idiots that believes everything the media tells you?
With a sweep of his arm, Teague added,
Have you seen this shit? Are you aware they've outlawed the ownership of guns? I've seen firsthand how far they will go.
Bob set his cup down and crossed his arms.
Why'd you leave Michigan, really?
Daniel started to wag a finger at Teague.
Were you still messing with those militia groups up there?
Teague grunted.
It's not called Michigan for nothing.
Andy rose from his chair.
Holy shit! You're one of those guys from that shooting, aren't you?
Christy looked at him.
What? They caught all those guys.
With a sneer, Teague replied,
That's what they told you. They didn't catch all of us.
Why'd you do it? Daniel asked.
Teague stood up. The real question is, why didn't you? How far are you going to let them push you? Some of us can only take so much shit. At some point, someone needs to stand up.
pounding his chest, he added, "On that day in Lansing, I was someone."
"None of this shit matters right now. We have to deal with the situation at hand," Bob said.
As Bob was talking, Gene came through the door. He slipped out without notice when the TV went out. He was pushing a cart with a large black piece of equipment on it.
"Make room,"
he said, as he wheeled it into the security office.
"What's this?" Bob asked, as Gene passed him.
Gene pushed the cart over into the far corner of the room and replied,
"Remember when I ran the coax for that camera up there in the pole?"
Bob nodded. Gene squatted down and started digging around behind the turret the monitors were mounted in.
"Well, I ran another one with it."
He pulled a cable out and stood up, connecting it to the box. Gene stood and patted the box.
"This is a Kenwood TS-990S. It's a ham radio. I keep it in my office and play around with it."
Christy wrinkled her nose. "What's it for?" Gene smiled as he turned the large console on.
"This has no government off switch. With this, we can listen to what's going on around the country, the world even."
Gene turned to the radio and continued to connect cables and other boxes together.
"I'm hungry," Daniel said.
"There's food in the cafe downstairs. We can get what we need from there."
"Make sandwiches," Bob said, as he looked at Christy. Her eyes narrowed.
"I'm not here to make sandwiches and do the laundry."
Gene looked up.
"I'm hungry too. I'll go make them."
Daniel leapt to his feet.
No, I'll go make them."
Looking at Christy, he asked, "You want to come help?" Gene shrugged and turned back to the radio, pulling a chair over to it and sitting down. In a huff, Christy replied,
"Fine."
Daniel ushered her out the door. Once in the hall, Daniel said, "I just didn't want him handling my food. I've seen him do some nasty stuff."
"Like what?"
The elevator door opened and they stepped in.
"Don't worry about it. Let's go see what we can find down there. I'm starving."
Down in the cafe, they wasted no time in going through the small shop and seeing what there was to be had. As it turned out, the little cafe had been recently stocked. There were still a considerable number of boxes with the Cisco label on them sitting in the corner of the small kitchen waiting to be put away.
"Hey, look at this," Christy said.
Daniel looked over to see her holding the metal door of a small walk-in cooler open. He poked his head through the door.
"Wow, there's a lot in here."
Stepping in, he started handing packages out to her.
"Let's put together a nice meal."
Once everything was prepared, they cleaned the utensils they used for prep and hung them back in their place. After all, they would probably have to use them again. Using a cart found in the storeroom, the food was loaded on and they wheeled it towards the elevator. Pushing the cart, Christy said,
"They must cater for the building here. There's a lot of food in there."
"Yeah, we're lucky. I have a feeling we're going to need it."
Christy stopped.
"How long do you think we'll be here? Why can't we just leave?"
"We'll leave just as soon as we can. You've seen what's going on out there. I don't want to get caught in that. The power is out and the phones are out. We need to wait and see what's going on before we try and leave."
Christy nodded. "But we will leave." Daniel leaned in and kissed her.
"Just as soon as we can."
They pushed the cart through the door of the security office, where a tinny voice was coming over Gene's radio. Bob held a finger to his lips. Daniel pushed the cart off to the side and sat on the counter beside Andy's position to listen to what was being said. The voice had a thick drawl, and Gene was smiling as he talked into the mic.
"It's good to talk to you, Sam. Been too many years."
"You too, Slim. Like I said, if you can make your way here, we're in good shape. The governor told the president she could stick her emergency decree where the sun don't shine. I don't like that bitch no way. Our power is still on and should stay on. They broke the circuits where they leave the state.
Any trouble anywhere? Gene asked.
There's some shit in Austin, the bastion of liberal bullshit in our great state. There's a little trouble in Dallas and Houston, but I think the guard will take care of that pretty quick.
What's the army out your way doing?
The voice in the radio cackled.
You won't believe it. The commander of Fort Hood called up the governor and put the base under his command.
The man laughed uproariously.
Can you believe that? I bet that bitch in Washington is screaming her lungs out. From what I've heard, the other Texas bases did the same. You know what the best part is? She's got two planes, them big-ass ones. Whatever one she's on is called Air Force One. Well, Air Force Two is sitting at Lackland. We've got her damn plane.
Gene laughed and keyed the mic.
That's pretty damn funny, Sam. Let me think about things. We're kind of bottled up here in Atlanta right now. I don't know how I'd even get out. Well, Slim, you better make up your mind quick. They're talking about closing the border and not letting anyone in. All right, Sam, thanks. You going to be monitoring this frequency? If I'm awake, I'm on here.
All right then, Sam, I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Gene dropped the mic and looked at Bob. What the hell was that all about? Daniel asked.
Things aren't looking too good out there, Bob said. Gene talked to a few people around the country, and a lot of the big cities are looking just like Atlanta. The lone exception is Texas. They still have power, and things are pretty normal there.
Teague sat back and put his hands behind his head.
You may all go to hell. I will go to Texas.
Bob chuckled.
Davy Crockett. Nice one.
I'm serious, though. From what I just heard here, I'm going to Texas. There's nothing here.
He pointed at the monitor.
Look at those people out there. You think things are going to get better here soon?
How the hell do you plan to get to Texas? Andy asked.
Teague shrugged. Same way I got here. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Gene stood up and walked over to the cart of food.
While we debate, I'm going to eat.
Sounds good, Bob said. Quite the spread, Daniel.
I helped, Christie said.
Picking up slices of cold cuts, Bob glanced up and with a smile said,
Thought you weren't here to make food and do laundry.
Christie picked up a deviled egg. I like to eat too. The group chatted as they ate, keeping one eye on the monitors. The talk was lighthearted, until the TV began to emit the emergency alert tones again. The screen switched to a podium with the seal of Homeland Security on it.
What's this shit? Teague asked.
Bob shushed him. The secretary stepped up to the podium. She was a short woman that belied her hotly contested appointment to the post. The president wanted to make a statement. She wanted to show she was supportive of women and, like her predecessor, was sympathetic to the plight of Muslims in America. With her hijab in place, she looked directly into the camera and began to speak. As you are now all aware, a state of emergency has been declared as a result of the financial crisis. We are working diligently on discovering the source of the problem, and, rest assured, we will find those responsible. As a result of the inability for families to secure food and other necessary items, the president has ordered the implementation of several executive orders. Firstly, these orders will allow the government to set wages and control the flow of money. It will also allow the control of prices. This is to prevent price gouging. As this is a financial issue, we will work diligently to make sure all Americans have access to the funds they need. Additionally, these orders will allow the government to take control of critical stockpiles such as food and fuel, to oversee the proper allocation of resources. Healthcare will also be controlled
to ensure it is available to all in need. To deal with the growing lawlessness in some of our cities, the United States Armed Forces are now wholly responsible for ensuring the peace. As a result, a dusk-to-dawn curfew has been established. Let me make myself very clear. We will not tolerate the lawlessness consuming some cities. The armed forces have been authorized to use lethal force. This is no trivial matter, and I urge you to heed this warning. In a continuing effort to prevent further penetration into our nation's critical systems, all forms of communication will continue to be restricted. We cannot allow those that wish us harm continued access. All phones, both cellular and landline, will continue to be interrupted with the exception of 911 lines, which can still be used. Likewise, the internet will also be limited until we have a better understanding of the situation. Continue to monitor your local television and radio stations for updates, as this will be the only way you will be able to receive current information. We ask that everyone remain calm and give the authorities time to sort the situation out. With that, the screen returned to the color pattern with the text. Daniel looked around the room. Everyone was still staring at the TV, except Jean. He'd pulled a chair up to the cart and was shoveling potato salad into his mouth as though it was a job. Daniel got a shiver and continued to survey the room. When he got to Teague, he was staring back at him. Teague rocked his chair back onto the back legs again and loudly said, "Bullshit!" Everyone's attention was on Teague. After a moment, Bob asked,
"Care to elaborate?"
Teague pointed at the TV.
"That bullshit. It's all bullshit."
Rolling his hand in front of him with a look of expectation, Bob said,
"And?"
Teague jumped up.
"You guys believe they've killed all forms of communication because someone hacked a bank?"
He looked around the room.
"I mean, come on. The only reason they do that is to keep us in the dark about what they're up to." "Let me guess. You think they're going to start rounding people up and putting them in FEMA camps?"
Daniel asked.
"If you think they're not going to use this opportunity to do just that to some people, you've been drinking the Kool-Aid too long."
Bob started to reply, but was interrupted by Andy.
"You ought to see this."
Tapping a few keys, Andy combined all the monitors on the wall into one large view. It was an image from one of the thermal cameras. It clearly showed the rioters' positions, marked by large white spots of bonfires. The camera scanned the crowd that was, for the moment at least, rather calm. There were many small fires with groups gathered around them. There was almost a festival air to the scene of people gathered around and socializing. The camera panned up the street. This is what Andy wanted everyone to see. On either side of the street, close to the faces of the businesses lining either side, were lines of soldiers. Even in the fuzzy view of the thermal camera, it was obvious they were in full battle rattle. Bob leaned back against the wall.
"Oh, this is about to get real interesting."
"What are they going to do?" Christie asked.
"Whatever it is, it ain't going to be good."
Teague rose and pointed at the monitor.
"Now you're all about to see why they've cut all the communications. Shit's about to get real."
The bank sat at the intersection of Peachtree and Piedmont in Buckhead. From that location, they could see the surrounding financial district, as well as the full length of either road. Just to the southeast, across Peachtree, was a large subdivision, Peachtree Park. Atlanta is one of those rare cities where suburbia reaches right into urban districts. High-rises sit in close proximity to homes, grocery stores, and gas stations. While the riots focused on the financial district, it was inevitable that it would spill out into the surrounding area. Many of the local businesses had already been looted, and several of them burned.
and many of the homes in Peachtree Park were looted, and some burned as well. It was through the scorched businesses on Peachtree Road that the troops approached from the southwest. As they closed in on the first line of the rioters, the soldiers seemed to fade away. They disappeared into the many buildings along the street. Some would reappear on the rooftops, taking up positions to cover the final assault.
"What are they doing? Where'd they all go?" Christie asked.
Teague sucked his teeth and lowered himself into a chair.
"You might as well sit down. They're going to wait. I imagine it will be after 2 a.m. before they make their move."
"Why so late?" Andy asked.
"Because people sleep the hardest at that hour. It's the witching hour for violence." Gene mopped his mustache with a napkin. Leaning back, he patted his stomach.
"I guess we'll see what's going to happen in a few hours. I'm going to see what else I can hear on the ether."
Christie looked at Daniel.
"I'm tired. Can we go sleep for a while?"
"I think everyone should get some rest," Bob said.
Gene was staring intently at the radio as he worked the dial.
"I'll sleep when I'm dead."
Daniel stood up and took Christie's hand.
"Come on, I've got a place we can crash for a while."
Bob pulled a handheld radio from a multiple radio charger.
"Here, take this with you. I'll call you if anything starts to happen."
"Thanks," Daniel said, as he took the radio. Then he headed to the door with Christie in tow. Christie leaned against the wall beside the elevator and ran her hands through her hair.
"I'm so tired. What are we going to do? We're stuck down here."
The elevator dinged and they stepped in.
"For now, we'll wait. There's nothing else we can do. But I need a little sleep."
Daniel took her down to the room Bob had showed him earlier. The bed was a little small, but they would fit if they spooned, and that was fine with him. He lay on the bed with his face in Christie's hair. It smelled incredible and relaxed him some. His mind was reeling from the day's events. After a while, Christie seemed to sense it.
"You asleep?" she asked.
"No."
She reached back and ran her hand over his leg.
"You all right?"
Daniel thought for a moment.
"I can't stop thinking about the man I shot."
"On the roof?"
"Yeah. I don't know if I did, but I must have. It's kind of strange. I can see the shooting in my mind, but I don't know if I killed him or not."
"I can't believe this is going on. I mean, there was a shooting and no cops came. What are we going to do? If the police can't get here, how are we going to get out?"
Daniel let out a sigh. Shaking his head, he replied,
"I don't know. Things are getting out of hand. Maybe we should go to Texas. Maybe Teague has a good idea to go out there."
Christie sat up on her elbow.
"You want to leave Atlanta? What's in Texas? Do you know anyone out there? Where would we go?"
He patted her leg.
"I don't know what to do, babe. I'm just thinking."
Christie lay back down and draped her arm over him.
"Let's see what's happening in the morning."
Chapter 6. Daniel was looking for the next handhold. He reached back and chalked his hand as he surveyed the rock face. The breeze picked up, and he looked back over his shoulder. The wind felt good on his face. Turning back to the rock face, he reached for the small bulge in the rock, and his foot slipped.
"Daniel! Daniel, you there?"
He bolted upright in the bed, scaring Christie. She sat up, rubbing her face.
"What's wrong? What is it?"
Daniel picked up the radio.
"Yeah, I'm here."
And he rubbed his eyes. He was sweating from the dream and felt disoriented.
come back up. The show's about to start.
On our way, he replied. Looking at Christy, he said, You coming, or do you want to sleep? She jumped from the bed. Oh, I'm coming.
Back in the security office, Bob was sitting in a swivel chair, looking at the monitor. Once again, Andy combined the screens into one large view. Bob alternated between sipping coffee and smoking a cigarette. As Daniel and Christy came in, he saluted them with a cup.
Perfect timing. Looks like they're about to kick this thing off.
Teague was sitting in a chair with his chin on his chest, asleep. Daniel looked around and asked,
Where's Gene? He went down to get some sleep.
Daniel looked at the monitor.
What's going on?
Bob motioned at the screen with his cup.
They're moving now. Let's see how they handle these guys.
Christy went to Bob's office for a cup of coffee. This was easier said than done. While there was coffee, a cup was another issue altogether. She tried several cups, one or two of which made her physically ill at the sight. She went back out to where everyone else was and found the cup she had used when they ate earlier and took it back. After fixing her cup, she came out and offered Daniel a sip as she sat down beside him. Daniel took it, swilling down a large gulp. Smiling, he thanked her and turned his attention to the monitor. Andy pointed at the screen.
The guys in the roof are moving.
Daniel looked at the time in the corner of the screen, and it showed 2:20. Teague sat up and stretched, his face turning red as he did.
I told you it would be around 2:30 or 3.
They watched as several men on the rooftops moved into their final positions, which certainly looked like firing positions. At the same time, the men on the ground began moving up Peachtree Road. The protesters were oblivious, and there was no movement inside their position. The men on the street stopped advancing, taking up positions behind cars and against buildings. They watched in silence. There were no microphones for the cameras. As it was early and still dark, it was like watching an old black-and-white movie. They could see the flashes and streamers of smoke racing towards the protesters' positions. While they couldn't see the other side of the rioters' position, they could see additional smoke canisters arcing in from the other side of Peachtree, and there were many. As the smoke landed, the troops moved in. These weren't normal riot control troops. There were no bump helmets with visors, batons, and plastic shields. These people were in full battle rattle as they began to run towards the rioters' position. They'd piled up all manner of obstacles, but they weren't very effective. As the troops swarmed in on foot, armored vehicles rounded the corner, spotlights blazing. They drove straight into the barricades, easily breaching them. Christy held her hand to her mouth as she watched people being gunned down in the road.
Oh my God, they're killing them!
Those ain't rubber bullets, Teague said.
Pointing at the monitor, Daniel said, They're handcuffing some of them.
They might be better off being shot right here, Teague said.
The group watched for over an hour as people were marched out, their hands cuffed and chained at the waist, leg irons restricting their ability to walk. The men on the ground were dragging bodies out and placing them in body bags, which were quickly loaded onto trucks and hauled away.
They're not leaving any evidence, Bob said.
Teague wagged a finger at the monitor.
They're not leaving anyone behind.
Christy looked at Daniel. Where are they taking them?
Nowhere good, Bob replied.
How can they do this? I mean, those people weren't doing anything, Christy said. Teague stood up.
There's a dusk-to-dawn curfew. They were on the street, so in the eyes of the government, they're criminals.
But we have rights. How can they do this?
Teague looked at Christie and shook his head.
Shit. You've only got the rights they allow you to have. The government has a monopoly on murder.
About an hour and a half after it all started, it was over. The trucks were gone, and not a single person could be seen on the street below.
Looks like they wanted them gone before the sun came up, Daniel said.
Teague stretched again.
No bodies, no crime. I'm going to get some sleep somewhere.
He left the office to find a place to grab a couple hours' sleep.
Daniel rubbed his temples. I'm tired, too. I'm going back downstairs.
Looking at Christie, he asked,
You coming?
She nodded and followed him out of the office. Daniel woke up when Christie got out of the bed. She looked over her shoulder.
I have to pee.
Daniel sat up and looked at his watch.
What time is it?
They were in the basement of the building with no natural light coming in, so he had no idea if it was day or night.
Holy shit! It's like 9 in the morning.
Christie came out of the bathroom.
Good. We needed the sleep.
Let's go up and see what's going on.
Yeah. Let's get some coffee, too.
They went up to the cafe for some coffee. It had to be better than the swill Bob made in his office. At the cafe, they had to figure out how to get the big machine working. But between the two of them, they ordered enough cups and watched them being made that they muddled through it. It wasn't long before the wonderful aroma of coffee filled the cafe. While the coffee brewed, Daniel went in the back and found something for them to eat. He came out with a couple of croissants and egg salad. Christie was sitting at a table, cradling a cup of coffee, another sitting on the table for Daniel. He set a plate down in front of her and pulled up a chair.
Ooh, I love egg salad, Christie said, as she picked up her sandwich.
Daniel picked up his cup.
I need this.
As they talked, Teague showed up. He looked like a toddler that just woke up from a nap. His hair was a mess, and he had a red line on the side of his face. He bobbled up and looked at Christie, then Daniel. Then he looked at the sandwich lying in front of Daniel. Reaching out, he mashed a finger into Daniel's croissant.
You gonna eat that?
Daniel slapped his hand away.
Yes, get off it, Dick.
Teague smiled and headed for the coffee maker. He returned with a cup of coffee and the tub with the remainder of the egg salad. Taking a seat, he dug into the egg salad with a spoon. After shoveling a couple of spoonfuls into his mouth, he looked at Daniel and asked,
What's going on outside?
Daniel shrugged as he took a sip of coffee.
No idea. We haven't been upstairs yet.
Where did you sleep? Christie asked. Teague worked his neck.
I found a couch in some office. It sucked. Hard.
Holding her coffee under her nose, Christie said, You should have come down to the litter rooms. The beds are pretty comfortable. Daniel stuffed the last bite of his sandwich in his mouth and stood up.
I'm ready to go up and see what's going on. You guys coming?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what's happening, Christie said as she got up. Teague waved them on.
You guys go on. I'm going to find something else to eat. I'll be up in a bit.
Bob was sitting in Andy's chair when they got up to the office. Naturally, there was a coffee cup in front of him and another cup full of ashes. Bob looked up and smiled as they came in.
You guys get some decent sleep?
We did, Daniel replied. What's going on up here? Bob pointed at the monitors.
See for yourself.
They looked at the big screen. It was focused on the area of the assault the previous night. There were no people in the frame. Several small wisps of smoke rose from various places, but there were no more fires. Everyone's gone, Christy said. Reaching for the camera controller, Bob added, from there, at least. He pulled up another view. Farther down Piedmont, they could see a large crowd gathered, a very large crowd.
Looks like they're grouping up into bigger crowds, maybe to try and defend themselves from what happened last night.
What's the rest of the area look like? Daniel asked. Bob pulled up the camera on the roof and swung it around. As the camera passed the 400 expressway, Daniel yelled, "Stop!" Bob stopped the camera, and Daniel pointed at the monitor.
"Look at all the cars in the expressway!"
Bob nodded.
"Looks like people are trying to get the hell out of town."
"I think we should soon as well," Daniel replied. The camera started to move again, turning to the southeast.
"There's been a lot of helicopter activity over at the dome in downtown Atlanta," Bob said.
As the top of the dome came into view, all they could see, even with the maximum zoom on the camera, was a Black Hawk helicopter dropping below the roofline. "Is that the military?" Christy asked. Bob nodded.
"Yep. They've been flying in all morning. Plus, I've seen several other choppers flying around, too. State police, sheriff's department, and some with no markings. But they have to be feds."
"I really believe we need to start thinking about getting the hell out of here," Daniel said. Bob let out a sigh and reached into his shirt pocket for a cigarette pack. It was empty. He shook it with exasperation, crumpled it, and threw it across the room. Getting up, he walked back into his office and took a carton out of the freezer of the small fridge. There were two other cartons there. Bob didn't like running out of smokes. Taking a pack out, he tossed the carton on his desk and went back out to join Daniel and Christy. Bob lit a cigarette and took a deep drag. Blowing out the smoke, he said,
"I'm waiting on Gene. I asked him to check the fuel levels of the generators."
Daniel stood up.
"While you wait on him, I'm going out to the parking garage. I need some air."
Christy jumped up. "I'll come with you." They went to the top of the garage. The morning was clear and warm, but not yet too hot. Daniel leaned over the edge of the parapet wall and looked down. The fire hose they had used the day before was still there. Christy came up beside him.
"What are you thinking about, babe?" she asked. "It just seems like the world is coming apart, and we don't have any idea what the hell is going on. No phones, no internet, no news, nothing."
"I know, it's scary. I want to leave, but I don't know where to go." Daniel hung his head.
"I know. Without info, we don't know what's safe and what's not."
Christy took his hand. "Let's go back and see what Gene says." Gene and Teague were there when they got back to the office. But the look on everyone's face told them the news wasn't good.
"What's the word?" Daniel asked. "There's enough fuel for maybe another 8 hours," Gene replied.
Daniel was surprised.
"So we'll run out of fuel today?"
"Without a doubt," Bob replied.
"So what do we do?" Christy asked. Teague grunted.
"Get the fuck out of Dodge."
"I agree," Bob said. "With the curfew in place, we need to get on the road early."
He pointed at the monitor that was now showing the 400 once again, and said,
"There's plenty of people moving around out there. We need to take advantage of it and get the hell out of here."
"To where?" Daniel asked.
"Texas!" Teague shouted.
"Where in Texas? You know anyone there?" Daniel asked.
"I've got a friend in Nacogdoches," Gene said.
Daniel was shaking his head. When Teague had previously said Texas, he hadn't really thought much about it. But now that it was actually being discussed, he couldn't believe it.
"You realize Texas is like 600 miles from here, right?"
Closer to 700, Gene said.
That presents the first obstacle, Bob said. That's a lot of fuel.
Daniel sat down in a chair. That's not a problem. My van has an aftermarket tank, a Titan. It holds 68 gallons. I could easily make it to Texas on a full tank. It was just a natural reply. The van could make it. Not that he was actually considering it. Christy looked at him. You actually want to go to Texas?
But do you have a full tank? Teague asked.
Daniel shrugged.
No. Only about a half tank.
Gene rubbed his whiskers.
And we need to think about this. If we're actually going to try and make a run for Texas, we have the fuel on hand.
Bob nodded.
We could take it from the generator's tanks. Good idea, Gene.
Daniel stood up.
Wait a minute. What are we talking about here?
Why the hell would we go to Texas? I mean, first, it's 700 miles. Fuel aside, do you actually think we'd make it? And if we did, where exactly would we go?
We can't drive at night. There's a curfew. It would take forever to get there, Christy said.
Not to mention all the roadblocks we'd probably encounter, Teague said. Bob shook out a cigarette and lit it. Taking a long drag, he thought for a minute. Looking at the smoke between his fingers, he said,
Well, the way I see it, Texas might be the safest place to go. I think things in this country have changed in a major way. I think it will be a long time before they go back to the way they were. You all saw what the government did to those people down below. They went in shooting. Those they didn't kill, they hauled off to God knows where. I don't want to end up in either of those situations.
I don't do FEMA camps, Teague said.
What other option do you have? Gene asked. Go home where there's no power, no communications? Sit in the dark and wait to see what happens?
Staring at the floor, Daniel shook his head.
I don't know. It just seems a bit rash to run off to Texas. I don't know.
Pulling the comb from his pocket, Gene combed out his mustache.
You better hurry up and figure it out. We'll run out of fuel in a few hours, and then this place goes dark.
Then, there won't be any fuel to put in the van. You'll be down to only one option, sitting in the dark at home. Christy grabbed Daniel's arm.
Babe, I'm with you, whatever you want to do.
Daniel looked at her. She was an amazing woman. Maybe he'd been wrong about keeping a little distance between them. He smiled and said,
I know you are.
Looking at Gene, he said, Let's go fill the van. That way, we have an option.
We need to start a plan for getting out of here, then. We can't just pile out into the street, Bob said.
Daniel nodded. All right, you guys work on that while Gene and I go down and fill up the van. It took a little maneuvering to get the van close enough to the diesel tank to transfer the fuel. Gene was an interesting guy, and obviously took a lot of liberty with his position in the building. He'd acquired all manner of stuff that would be hard to justify as being needed, but was handy to have. One of those was the transfer pump they were using to move the fuel into the van. Both men were wearing earmuffs to protect against the roar of the generators. They were loud as hell and hot. While Daniel watched the van, Gene disappeared and came back riding the forklift. A pallet sat on the forks with four small drums on it. He climbed off the machine and opened the bungs on them, setting the lids on top of each drum. Daniel wasn't certain what he was doing, but figured it out when the tank on the van was full. The two couldn't communicate due to the level of noise, but when Gene moved the nozzle of the pump into one of the drums, Daniel knew what Gene was up to. The drums were small, 15 gallons. These would be easier to handle on the road, should they need them.
Jean leaned in close and shouted,
"Where do you want to put it?"
Daniel looked at the van and pointed to the large rack on the roof.
"Let's put them up there. That way, we save space inside."
After filling the small drums, Jean nodded and hopped back on the forklift, raising the load up. Daniel climbed up the ladder on the rear of the van and got on top. He rolled the barrels onto the rack and laid them down. The rack was large enough to hold them and still had more space. Jean waved at him and tossed up a couple of ratchet straps. Daniel strapped the drums down and hopped off. It was nice knowing they now had over 120 gallons of fuel on board. Once the fuel was on the van, Jean waved for him to follow, and the two went to Jean's office. Stepping in, Daniel took the muffs off his ears and wiped sweat from his forehead.
"Damn, it's hot out there."
Jean tossed his muffs onto his already cluttered desk.
"Yeah, most people have no idea what these buildings are really like. They only know when the elevator stops or the shitter won't flush."
Daniel nodded.
"I guess I was guilty of that too."
Jean smiled, the ends of his mustache turning up.
"Yeah, but you're learning."
Daniel laughed.
"Better late than never.
You ready to head back upstairs?" Jean held up a finger.
"Not yet. While we're down here, I'd like to load some other things we may find useful."
Curious, Daniel asked,
"Like what?"
Jean rubbed his hands together.
"Oh, just some party favors. Follow me."
Bob, Christie, and Teague leaned over Bob's desk. A large map of Greater Atlanta was spread out. Bob laid a finger on the map and traced it across the paper. Picking up an atlas, Bob opened it.
"I think we should take I-20 West. It'll be the fastest way."
Teague nodded.
"But we can only travel during the day and need to find decent places to spend the night."
"You think with the curfew we could get in trouble if someone finds us at night?" Christie asked.
Bob shrugged. "Right now, who knows? The object will be to not be seen at night. Daniel's van is a dark olive drab, the perfect color to hide. We'll find places to pull off in the evening, giving us plenty of time to find a good place to hide. Once we find that place, we'll have to take care of things like food and whatnot before it gets dark. Once it's dark, there's no lights, no sound. We have to just maintain a stealth mode.
Sleep in shifts, so there's always someone awake to serve as a lookout." Christie looked at Teague. "You think it's that dangerous?"
Bob chuckled. "We don't know, and I, for one, don't want to find out the hard way. He's right. Good thinking, cousin."
Teague pointed at the map again.
"We also need alternative routes around all major cities. I prefer we didn't drive through any of them, personally." "That would add a lot of time. I agree we need alternate routes, at least two. But I say we drive through them, if there isn't anything major going on."
"It will all depend on what the roads are like," Bob replied. Teague nodded.
"Agreed. You got a highlighter?"
The three got to work mapping their routes around larger cities like Birmingham and Tuscaloosa in Alabama. The next major obstacle would be Jackson, Mississippi. Once they cleared those, they'd face Monroe and Shreveport in Louisiana. But there would be countless smaller cities between that they'd have to deal with as well. They also mapped out a route that would keep them off the interstate entirely. The thought was that the interstate could either become locked with traffic or simply unsafe. The route off the interstate would take considerably longer. But it was better to have a plan than to go forward blindly and have to adapt on the fly.
"We need to think about food," Christie said.
Shaking out another smoke, Bob replied, "Yes, we do."
Christie looked at Teague.
Come on. Let's go down to that little cafe and see what we can scavenge from there. There's a lot of stuff there.
Good idea, Bob said with a wink.
We can also raid all the vending machines, too, Teague added. Christy wrinkled her nose.
I don't want to live on candy bars and chips.
Bob pointed at her with his cigarette.
Yeah, but it'd be better than being hungry.
Christy shrugged. I guess. Teague headed for the door.
Come on. Let's see what we can find.
As they opened the door, Bob said,
I'm going to stay here and watch the cameras. We need to know what's going on outside.
And he turned his attention to the monitors. He shook out yet another smoke and put his feet up on the desk and leaned back in the chair. Smoking with one hand, he used the other to manipulate the camera controller. Bringing up the multi-camera view, he examined each for any movement. One view caught his eye, and he expanded it to full screen. This was a view of Piedmont Road. A block or so down the road was the Piedmont Peachtree Crossing Shopping Center. It was home to a Kroger, World Market, Starbucks, and other trendy shops, all of which were now looted out. The Starbucks had burned and was now a pile of charred ashes. But the plaza had a large parking lot that was filling with people, spilling out onto Piedmont. Bob zoomed the camera in. There were no police or any form of crowd control present. As Bob moved the camera around, he began noticing several of the people in the crowd were armed, and many of them were wearing masks. He watched as the crowd spilled out onto Piedmont and began making their way both directions, a large portion moving towards Peachtree.
This can't be good, Bob thought,
as he watched what was growing into a sea of people spread out onto the streets. They seemed to come from everywhere and swell in numbers as they filled the streets. While Bob couldn't hear them, they were chanting and shouting as they moved through the trash-strewn canyons. At intersections, the crowd would break into groups, some staying at the intersection, others moving on. Those that stayed began throwing up barricades, using everything at their disposal, from park benches and garbage cans to blocks and tires. This was going to make getting out of the area a real issue. Daniel and Jean finished loading Jean's party favors into the van. Daniel stepped back, rubbing his head.
You think this is safe having this stuff in here?
Jean shrugged.
Just don't mix them.
Daniel shook his head. I'm going outside to get some air.
I'm headed back up to Bob's office,
Jean said, as he turned away. Daniel wanted to be alone for a minute. He took the stairs up to the top level of the garage and looked out across the area. His nostrils were assaulted by numerous smells. Burning rubber, garbage, and an odd odor he couldn't quite put his finger on. It gave the area an overriding pungent smell that wasn't pleasant. Daniel looked down over the edge of the wall and was surprised to see so many people on the street. How the hell are we going to get out of here? He asked himself. The enormous mass of people on the road below him were spread out all along Peachtree. Most concerning, there were building barricades at the intersection with Piedmont, their way out. This worried him, and he quickly headed back for Bob's office. Daniel was a little excited when he came through the door to the office, and he started talking without looking at the monitors.
We're in trouble. There's no way we can get out of here with that crowd out there. You should see all the people on the street.
Cigarette in hand, Bob pointed at the wall of monitors.
You mean them?
Daniel looked over and felt a little silly.
Yeah, them. They're building barricades out there.
The view on the screen swung around. Again, Bob pointed at the monitor.
You mean those?
Yeah, Bob, those. What are we going to do? Bob got up and walked towards his office.
We're going to wait on Gene.
Daniel looked around.
Where's Gene? He said he was coming up here.
He left, saying he would take care of this, Teague said.
What the hell does that mean?
Daniel asked. Teague shrugged.
Hell if I know.
Christy stood up. Sit down and have something to eat, babe. We found a lot of food we can take with us, but you should eat something now.
But what's Gene doing? We can't get out of here with that mob out there.
Christy pulled him into a chair and said,
Sit down. Gene said he had it. He was actually laughing as he left. Said he'd be back when it was all ready.
She set a large bowl of soup in front of him and some crackers. He started to protest, but Christy cut him off, telling him to eat. Daniel didn't understand why no one was concerned. Didn't they realize what it was like out there? He looked up at the monitor, at the growing crowd on the street in front of the bank.
Where are the police or National Guard?
The day was spent hanging out, watching the growing mobs on the street. Teague disappeared to, as he put it, search the building for anything useful. Daniel took that to mean he wanted to be nosy and probably break into things. He remembered his cousin from his youth having an uncontrollable temptation for locks. If something was locked, be it a door, a gate, or, God forbid, a box, he had to get into it.
Even now, Daniel could see him prying open file cabinets all over the building.
After being gene several hours, Gene reappeared. He was dirty and looked tired. Coming into the office, he slumped into a chair and announced,
It's done.
Daniel looked at him.
What's done?
Too tired to smile, Gene replied abruptly,
You'll see.
Not long after Gene's arrival, Teague showed up as well. He dropped into a chair beside Gene. Bob lit another cigarette. He seemed to have an unending supply. Looking around the room, he cleared his throat.
Now that everyone is here, I think we need to talk.
He paused and looked around the room.
We know we can't stay here. We have to leave.
He pointed at the monitors.
From the look of things outside, we need to get the hell out of the area.
Daniel leaned forward in his chair.
But is setting out to Texas the right choice?
And that is the question, Bob replied.
What are our choices? Teague asked.
Stay in a place that's burning down around us?
Bob shrugged, leaned back in his chair, and threw his feet up on the counter. He was wearing two different socks of a loud pattern, both bunched up around his ankles. Christy noticed and giggled. Bob looked at the inch of exposed flesh between the socks and the pants and smiled.
We could just try to go upstate. I know a bunch of places up there.